Cinema Classics is brought to you by the Gateway Film Center at the South Campus Gateway, 1550 North High Street. Further details online at gatewayfilmcenter.com.
Cinema Classics is produced by John DeSando and Johnny DiLoretto. Listen to the shows online at wcbe.org or like our page on Facebook and listen to shows in their entirety there. I'm Johnny DiLoretto.
And I'm John DeSando. And this is Cinema Classics.
It is, John. Last week or the other week, we...
What do you want me to say? Just say previously, because okay. It was 2 weeks ago.
Recently, how about that?
Recently, good.
3, 2... John, recently we opened this big can of worms with Chris Hamill, president programmer of the Gateway Film Center. President just now, right? Now it's just president.
I'm still programming.
Okay. 3, 2... Yeah, so recently, John, we opened this big can of worms with president programmer of the Gateway Film Center, Chris Hamill, about the contemporary state of cinema. And we were off and running in this long conversation, which had to be truncated, but we need to revisit because there are a lot of things we still need to talk about. So Chris is back, and well, let's get right into it. What is the latest trend in movie going?
Well, thanks for having me, guys. There's a lot of trends in movie going. Obviously, from a film perspective, the audience is still flocking to and seems to be seeking out big-budget blockbuster films. The studios themselves are more dependent on these blockbuster tentpole films than ever, and thus, when one of them goes wrong, early on this summer we've seen The Hangover 3 be in this category of films that didn't work, it leaves the studios scrambling because they sort of figuratively had all of their eggs in The Hangover 3's basket. From the exhibition side, for those who are presenting these films to the public, the lack of great films has led them down the path of a lot of new gimmicks, or the return of a lot of gimmicks, to try and lure you out of your house to see a movie. A great example of this is the return of dine-in cinema. This is nothing new. Those who lived in Columbus will remember in the 1970s when Glenn Ackerman opened the Flickers Theaters. So it's not like this new trend is, or this trend is new, but this lack of really great films is forcing exhibitors to find new ways to make revenue.
And 3D?
Well, 3D is interesting. It's still working very well in some markets, and in others it doesn't. Hmm. The studios really shot themselves in the foot here. They had a great reintroduction to 3D with Avatar. And personally, I'm not a huge fan of the film Avatar, but you can't really complain about how it looked.
No, it was a very good use of 3D. Usually 3D annoys me. But in that case, I thought they did a great job.
They've completely walked away from how 3D was perceived in the 50s when it was a fun gimmick.
Yeah.
And they've rested on, or they're depending so much on the economics of these 3D films, but they're still not properly investing in their creation. You see plenty of films that are post-creation. You know, the film wasn't shot in 3D, and then they decided at the 11th hour that, oh, we'll make a few extra dollars if we put it in 3D. And that's unfortunate for two reasons. One, audiences are already complaining about the cost of going to movies, and now you've added more expense.
Yes.
And second, there are films actually being made in 3D where the 3D is tremendous. The 3D in The Great Gatsby was great earlier
Star
this
Trek?
Year. Star Trek's 3D is great.
Yes.
Those weren't post-converted. Those were films that were shot in 3D to be watched in 3D by an audience. Oh. Then you also had Iron Man 3 this year, which was not shot in 3D, looked pretty bad in 3D, and you went ahead and alienated a whole lot more people who shelled out extra money to see the film.
But don't you think that in the end, you don't really go to a movie because of 3D, but rather isn't it always the fact that you'll go to a movie because it's a good movie? And what makes me optimistic about the whole situation is that we're continuing to make good movies, and even the blockbusters are good movies. So all the strategies that they're using seem to me to be kind of, yes, that's nice, but in the end, if you don't have a good movie, forget your 3D. Forget your dining. So, yeah.
If you continue to see the creation of an art form as a business and you're making decisions based on what looks good on a spreadsheet,
yeah,
you're not going to produce great art. And that's what's happening. Listen, to say that these franchise films can't be great is silly. I think we all loved Avengers, correct?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, that's a franchise.
Yeah.
But it was well written. It was well acted. It was well shot. But you can't, you're not going to see tons of quality film coming out of a studio executive's office, and all they're thinking about is we're going to invest this many dollars in creation, this many dollars in marketing, and get this much of a return. You know, great films start with great stories. And then from the great story becomes, or, you know, great actors are cast and great directors are chosen. And that's what makes people want to go to the movies, is seeing something that they enjoy, that they can relate with, that it's a great story. And unfortunately, a lot of what American and world international moviegoers are getting is not great stories. It's just something that was produced with an ROI, or a return on investment, being top of mind.
Yep.
It also seems that, you know, what really pays off, and they never take note of it, it seems, is when you take risks. I mean, let's face it, the Avengers was a risk. That whole idea, that concept that you're going to cram all these superheroes into one movie. The fact that they even made a Thor movie when they were really trying to, like, stay, like, let's make Iron Man really realistic. But if they were going to make this comic book thing work, they had to explore Thor and that kind of craziness. And the Avengers is really a great example of, hey, let's do something nuts, and it pays off. The Great Gatsby, on the different end of that spectrum, is another risk that paid off. Who would think that a Baz Luhrmann adaptation in 3D of F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel would be successful? But it is, when they take risks. And that's, isn't that, I mean, Chris, you're a great businessman. Isn't that, like, doesn't that always define the successes of an era, is when somebody, like, breaks the mold and does something different? Why don't we do it more often?
Well, almost by definition, you need to have a whole bunch of people doing things the same way to allow for a risk-taker philosophy to exist. Another great example from what you were talking about was Inception. Inception was a few years ago now.
Yeah.
But a really interesting film. And I went and heard Christopher Nolan speak earlier this year, and he talked about having to leverage the studio, it's Warner Brothers in this case, to allow him to make, or if he was going to make the Dark Knight films, he had to be able to make Inception in the middle. So he had to actually sort of strong arm them, because they were so desperate for the Dark Knight films, to get Inception made.
Yeah.
Inception, by the way, turned into this international phenomenon. I think it grossed like $800 million internationally. And so to your point, Johnny, that was a risk, but the studios at this point aren't very interested in those. You know, they're looking for more tried and true franchises.
Well, when you talk, Johnny's talking about risk. The risk we're talking about is that $100 million investment in a film is peanuts these days. You can go up to $700-800 million by the time you have to advertise, market. That film that may have cost you $200 million could, in the end, cost you $600 million, which is just give an idea of how many tickets you have to sell to get back that investment. So the risks are enormous. These little independent films can take risks, but the chance is they're not going to go anywhere.
It's a really strange time, John.
Yeah.
The ability, as we talked about last time, the ability for an independent filmmaker with a good story to make his film at a really reasonable cost is better than ever.
Yes.
You can make a film for virtually nothing at this point.
That's a great point, yeah.
However, theater owners, you know, we're paying more for these films, these blockbuster films, than we've ever paid before. Iron Man 3 was the most expensive film ever from exhibition standpoint.
Right.
And Man of Steel is likely to beat it. So, you know, on one side, you've got an independent film society who can make films for nothing, and then on the other side you have studios who are incapable of controlling these other filmmakers who just put millions and millions and millions behind specific scenes, John. Specific scenes. Yeah. There's a scene in Man of Steel that costs $3 million. I mean, and you can understand why the studios have to charge the theater owners as much as they do. All of these things sort of coalesce in a way that leaves moviegoers, the most important people in this conversation, questioning the value of going to movies.
Well, consider a young couple. What it costs them to go to a movie when they get a babysitter and maybe go out and get something to eat? Phenomenal. $50, $70, $80, I would think. And so it's a serious business for our moviegoers. And so we, whatever decisions we make, there are so many people involved, especially those moviegoers, that it's kind of like, geez, what a business. I mean, it's a fabulous business, but it's so, so risky.
It's a great business. I've told you before, there's a lot of reasons to not go to the movies, but there's more reasons to go to the movies. It's still gorgeous images on big screens with peers.
Yep.
And I've told Johnny many times, you know, everybody has a kitchen, but they still go out to eat. You want experiences that you can't have at home. But you're right, you know, movie going continues to be probably the least expensive out-of-home activity people can do.
Right.
But that doesn't mean the investment isn't significant nonetheless. And they want to know that they're going to see great stories and they're going to have something to talk about. And it's unfortunately, the status of the industry is that you see people from the exhibition side reaching for these niche opportunities to capture you, such as dine-in cinema or all these different things that you're seeing, because unfortunately, the quality of the film is not there.
Nobody's talked about Blu-ray and home theaters and so on. I'll bet many people in our audience are thinking that's what's really cutting into the business. Is that so? Is it that people aren't going to theaters because they have their own theaters?
No way.
Right.
You know, the guy who invests $10,000 in a home theater doesn't wait 6 months to watch The Avengers. They're the first guy in line to watch The Avengers.
Right.
And that's silly. The people who build these theaters love movies. They love the cinema. They love it so much that they want to try and recreate it in their house. Most of the people I know who have home theaters tend to watch a lot of sporting events in them.
Yeah.
You know, or they watch Avengers for the second time or the third time with friends. You know, all Hollywood has to do is keep making films that people want to go see. I've never bought into that philosophy, and I think both industries can coexist. And,
right.
You know, Blu-ray is the industry that's in trouble. Huh. You know, the streaming online way to see movies is certainly cutting significantly into the Blu-ray audience.
All right.
We don't even call them DVDs anymore. We call them Blu-rays. The DVD market's completely gone.
Yeah.
I think the studios know that they have to bring these films to theaters if they want to even have a home market.
And, you know, you mentioned the home theater people,
right.
John. I think it's less those people, like as Chris said, they're the first in line, and more so the people that don't care where they kind of get their cinematic content, whether it be on their laptops or their iPads or their devices. But those same people still seek out peer experiences elsewhere, whether it be through food, restaurant going, or concert going. And they just need a good reason to have a peer experience in the theater, and they'll come back.
Yes. Lest anyone in our audience think that because we're so tough on this industry that we don't love it, they're wrong. We do. Lest they think it's not going anywhere, it is going forward, not backward. And I always remember George Will saying, if you took all the paintings off all the museums and so on, there'd be barely a noise made by the population. You took movies away, there'd be a worldwide revolution. This is the most powerful art medium in the history of our civilization.
I completely agree. And, you know, to defend the studio system, which most of us see studio films, you know, they're following the money. They are doing things that moviegoers as a whole have told them, if you do this, we will come to the theater and we'll watch the film. So if people listening, you know, if you want a higher quality film, you need to go, you know, check out these independent films. Check out these films with new American artists and voices. A film like Francis Ha, which we were speaking about earlier, you know, go see that film. Because the more you go see quality films, the more likely the studios are to go, these stories matter. These actors matter. These interesting ways of telling a story matter. And if you go see Fast and Furious exclusively, which I think we're on 6, 7 to be released in next July, the studio believes that's what you want. And if it's not what you want, if you want something better, then you have to show them with your feet that you want to see something different. You want to see something exciting and new. And I agree with you, John. We're not going anywhere as an industry. But I sincerely hope that the quality of film begins to improve. And that's because audiences want something better.